Do we have something to plug in?
You have the thing?
Three. Should I attach any device? Oh, thank you very much. Whoever bought this, you bought this? Oh, thank you. So I thought that today we would do something Pesach related because it's almost Pesach, so it seemed appropriate. But something which involves both Pesach and Choshen Mishpat. So what better topic than to speak about the case of a person who inherits chametz. A person inherits chametz, and the timing of when they inherit chametz might create a bit of a problem. This is a situation that came to my attention. Somebody brought a case to me several years ago. They asked, from the standpoint of Yerusha, the standpoint of the laws of inheritance of Choshen Mishpat, what happened was that either they or somebody they knew inherited chometz from a relative who died right before Pesach. I think it was Pesach, Erev Pesach after Chatzos, the point in time in which the chometz becomes completely prohibited. I don't know if it was their father, an uncle, some relative where they were the Yoresh and they received from the Morish a large stash of a chametz, I think in the form of valuable schnapps. Schnapps is generally assumed to be chametz, made often from barley, from wheat, from products that ferment and become chametz. There's a discussion whether, since it evaporates, maybe that somehow takes away the chametz status, but we generally assume that all schnapps is chametz gomer and would be subject to all of the laws of chametz of Alava Pesach. If Pesach passed and the person didn't sell their schnapps, then you wouldn't be allowed to consume that schnapps afterwards. That's why there are beer companies and other liquor companies which have been determined to be owned by Jews, where they don't sell their chametz before Pesach, and the kashrus organizations such as the CRC have to warn people about those companies so that they don't purchase their products because it's a serious issue of chametz shavah lava Pesach. So this person had the same issue within their family. Whoever was person who passed away, the moish, as we say, the person who bequeathed the chametz, the person was very sick the last number of days, the weeks of their life, and it was presumed that they did not get around to selling their chametz. It wasn't a situation where there was anybody who was taking care of those affairs on their behalf, so it was presumed, it may not have been known that they owned chametz, but it was discovered afterwards that they owned all this chametz and they did not have the chance to sell the chametz beforehand. And given that they were in dire straits, they were in the process of dying on Erev Pesach, chances are they weren't mevatel their chametz, they weren't their last words to say kol chamira v'chamia. It's probably not the last thing that came out of their mouths. Therefore, there was no mechiras chametz, there was no bitul chametz, the chametz was still in their possession, certainly no bior chametz. So what happens from the standpoint of halacha? How do we view Yerusha? How do we view the interaction and intersection between the laws of Yerusha and the laws of owning chometz on Pesach, when it comes to this situation?
And now, the rabbi of the local town didn't sell the chometz for anybody.
It did not seem like the rabbi necessarily took care of this situation. That it could be that the person wasn't necessarily a part of a shul. They may not necessarily even have been at that point involved. Generally, the rabbi does, so the people who bring the forms over to the rabbi. We've gotten more sophisticated and more sweeping with that. We try to cover our bases and say even people who haven't gotten around to sending in their forms yet, right. The forms got lost in the mail. We try to cover all of our bases. It's a real question as to whether you could even say if somebody did not even fill out a form or have in mind to authorize the rabbi, whether you can say Zoch and the other Mishlo Bifonov, whether you have the ability to do that because you're not giving something to somebody or taking away. So there's a shita that says that we only say, like the Tzos says, we only say Zochen Li Adam Shalom B'fanim, we don't say Zochen Me Adam Shalom B'fanim, so that doesn't necessarily work. It's a machlokis, Ladina, whether it works or not, but let's assume that it wasn't even done in this case, that the rabbi didn't have such a sophisticated system in place, so that this person may not have paid their membership dues for a number of years. They may not have been automatically included by the rabbi of the city. Yes, you
what
could
do that. What about the Beis Din's ability to make other people's property hefker?
Hefker, Beis Din hefker. That's an interesting idea, whether you should just be mafkir everybody's chometz. It's not such a simple exercise. exercise to do, that also requires some type of a das, that you can't just be mafkir, you know, if a person does not necessarily recognize the hefker, shall we say. It has to be a little bit more of a thought of a real type of hefkeris if you're going to do something like that. It's an interesting question. It's a good question. So anyway, there are four different time periods where this situation or scenario could occur, and each one might have different nafkaminos and different applications in halacha. One is that the person who passed away was the morish, who bequeathed the chametz, may have passed away while it was still mutter to consume the chametz. Right? Up until Erev Pesach, the fourth hour, you're still allowed to eat chametz. Up until the fifth hour, you're still allowed to derive benefit from chametz. There's a famous essay of Relfalo Soloveitchik of the Briska Rav and the Chidushi Agriz al Rambam, in which he says, we have a machlokis between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah as to whether you're allowed to eat chametz during the fifth hour. Right? Rabbi Meir says you can even eat chametz up until the end of the fifth hour. Rabbi Yehuda says, then we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, you can't eat chametz after the fourth hour, but you can still get benefit up until the end of the fifth hour. So the Briska Rav says, really, as far as the chepsa, the Briskas were very into chepsa and gavra, as far as the chepsa of chametz is concerned, everybody agrees that the chepsa of chametz is 100% permissible, 100% mutter, even by achila, up until the end of the fifth hour. It's just that according to Rabbi Yehuda, we make a hachaka. We say that in order to distance a person from avera, we prohibit people from eating chametz after the fourth hour. So we go overboard because of the chumrah of eating chametz. It's in Issacharis, it's also in Bamashu, because of that tremendous chumrah. So we go overboard and we say that even though, according to Torah law, we are only prohibited from consuming chametz or getting benefit from chametz after the sixth hour of the day. However, before the sixth hour of the day is perfectly permissible. However, we go overboard in terms of just making hachako. So as far as the hachako of eating is concerned, so Rabbi Yehuda applies that hachako even after the fourth hour. However, technically speaking, for sure, chametz is 100% mutter up until the end of the fifth hour. And certainly everybody agrees that it's mutter bahana. So it's in every, a person owns their chametz up until the end of the fifth hour. That's not a problem. It's not an issue. So let's say that the chumitz was inherited before the end of the fifth hour by the person who is receiving the chumitz from their morish, because the morish dies at that point in time. So what's the din? So the first question you have to ask is, does it make a difference if you know that you inherited the chametz, so you don't know that you inherited the chametz? Let's say that this is some long-lost relative, and you didn't find out for a long time afterwards that the person died, but it turns out that you inherited the chametz right away.
Well, you might have known they died, but not know that you're the
heir. Or the person died, you don't know that you were the heir, per se. Or, well, maybe, we're talking about a Torah heir, so you should know, but you didn't know there was an uncle, and you didn't know the uncle didn't have any children, or whatever, you were the only heir, however it worked out. Or even it was a close relative, but you didn't know that the close relative had chametz. A person loses a son loses a father, and he didn't know that the father had a big stash of schnapps that was not sold before Pesach. So do we say that there are any mitigating grounds on that basis? So one question you have to ask is like this. According to American law, when a person dies, the Yerusha does not automatically pass to the heirs. It has to go through a process known as probate. Do we say that as long as the estate has not yet been subject to probate and the assets are just kind of, you know, sitting in the estate awaiting disposition to the heirs, do we say that maybe from a Dina de Malchusa Dina standpoint, it's not considered to be in the possession of the heirs? So maybe we could say like that. So who cares? Even if the person died 2 days before Pesach, but Lemaisa, the estate had not yet been subject to probate. So maybe for that reason, we would say that it's not in the possession, certainly not in the possession of the Moish anymore, because he's not in the world, right? Or she's not in the world. But it's also not in the possession, you can argue, of the person who's the heir, who would inherit the chametz. So this is a question as to whether we would look at Dina de Malchusa Dina with respect to this issue. So it's interesting, Rabbi Chaim Jachter, who writes a lot on halachic topics, is the author of several volumes of Gray Matter that you may be familiar with. So he asked this question of a Bible Kohen. The Bible Kohen is a big Talmud Chacham in Brooklyn, and he asked Rabbi Bokon whether there we would say that the Yerusha does not come into the possession of the heirs until after probate. Rabbi Bokon cited from the Tshuva of the Rashba notes that when it comes to matters of Yerusha, we never apply the principles of Dina D'Malchus Sedina. That's his interpretation of the famous Tshuva of the Rashba that talks about a situation where a man gave a dowry to his daughter, and then the daughter died after a year or so of marriage, and the husband would have inherited, and the argument was that the dowry should go back to the wife's father, because that was the Dina D'Malchus Sedina. And the Rashba says, we don't follow Dina D'Malchus Sedina in these matters. If they had made a tanai, a condition, with respect to the inheritance, that the inheritance should go back to the father if the daughter would die without any children after, say, a year or so or less of marriage, so then maybe that condition could be respected under certain circumstances. But as far as Dina D'Malchus Sedina is concerned, there's no Dina D'Malchus Sedina when it comes to Yerusha. And this is evident also from the comment of the Rambam. The Rambam says that you can't, in general, even make conditions when it comes to Yerusha, because Yerusha is described in the Torah as Chukas Mishpat. It's described as something which is of ritual law. It's a Chukas Mishpat. So just like you can't make conditions to make a pig kosher, so too you can't make conditions to make Yerusha to be transferred in any other way than that which is prescribed by the Torah. So if the Torah says that when a person dies, the Yerusha goes to the heirs, that's what we call a milsa de memela. What does milsa de memela mean? It means it's automatic. Yerusha is something that happens automatically. You cannot, in general, even change the terms and conditions of a Yerusha. There's a little bit of wiggle room for certain technical reasons with respect to a husband stipulating that he's not going to inherit from his wife. That was the case that the Rashba dealt with. A little bit more wiggle room. But if you're not dealing with a husband inheriting from his wife in any other type of Yerusha, a son inheriting from his father or from his uncle or a brother or something like that, so in any other, a daughter inheriting from a father if there are no sons, any other type of Yerusha is non-negotiable. It's non-negotiable. It's a milsa de memela. Therefore, whether the person knows it or not, whether the person likes it or not, the Yerusha is going to go to them. So then the person has already inherited the chametz. If they already inherited the chametz before the moment in time in which the chametz became usher, in which, let's say, it's before the fifth hour of Erev Pesach, so then, technically speaking, the chametz is in their possession, and they have to get rid of the chametz, right? They have an obligation to get rid of the chametz. You'll say, no big deal. Everybody does bittul, right? Even if you don't know about chametz that you own, when it comes to the fifth hour of the day, everybody makes the declaration for chamira v'chamira, the ikar v'shusei, right? The yadati, the lo yadati, the chamisei, the lo chamisei, whether I'm aware of the chametz, whether I'm not aware, I've seen it, whether I'm not, I'm mevatel all of the chametz. No problem. You mevatel the chametz. So that's good in terms of avoiding the violation of Baal Yiro, Baal Yimatzeh. It would work in that sense that once you do bittul of chametz, that you nullify all of the chametz in your possession, so then you are not going to be liable for Baal Yiro, Baal Yimatzeh, technically speaking. But would you be allowed to benefit from the chametz that was still in your possession during that time? Let's assume you didn't sell the chametz. It was still in your possession, right? You didn't know about the schnapps, to sell the schnapps. We'll get to the question as to whether you could sell that which you don't know about. But let's, before we get to that question, let's assume you didn't sell the chametz. Let's assume that you didn't sell any chametz because you didn't own any chametz. You didn't go through a mechira altogether. We generally recommend that even if a person owns no chametz whatsoever, they should still sell their chametz, because maybe, just maybe, there'll be some chametz that they forgot about. Or they'll end up inheriting chametz and they won't know that they inherited the chametz right before Pesach. This is one of the scenarios that leads to the conclusion you should sell your chametz no matter what. Let's say the person didn't sell their chametz, but they were mevatel the chametz. So then that should be good enough for them after Pesach to be able to enjoy their schnapps. The problem is, the Yerushalmi has a machlokus between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish in this regard. The Yerushalmi says that according to Reish Lakish, a person could do that very easily. They can be mevatel the chametz, and then they've made it null and void. And after Pesach is over, lo and behold, they discover, hey, you know, this chametz is still around. I'm going to take it back. So Reish Lakish says, no problem, you could do that. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, you can't do that. We're not going to allow that. Why is it Rabbi Yochanan says that we're not going to allow that? Because we're worried that a person is going to engage in a haruma. There'll be mevatel the chametz, but it's just going to be mere lip service. It doesn't mean anything. They have in mind that they're going to benefit from all of this delicious and wonderful schnapps after Pesach. And they say right now that they're mevatel it. They're not really mevatel it. If they were really nullifying the chametz and making it like the dirt, the dust of the earth, ke'afra de'ara, then they wouldn't have in mind that they're going to enjoy it afterwards. The fact that after Pesach comes along, they're now going to consume this chametz shows that they did not have the requisite intent at the time that they did the bittul. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan says, if you do the bittul and it turns out you have chametz that's in your possession, you're not allowed to benefit from that chametz after Pesach is over. So therefore, even though you may not have violated by Rav Yimatzeh, you're still not going to be allowed to benefit from the chametz, so it's still not going to be a perfect solution. So what then would you have to rely upon? You would have to rely upon perhaps the consideration that this was an onus gomer, meaning you had chametz in your possession over Pesach, but you had no reason to ever suspect that you would have the chametz. You tried very hard. You looked in all of your pantries and your cabinets and under your beds and under every single crack and crevice within your house. You really tried to do a very thorough bedikas chametz. You did bio chametz. You really were extremely responsible. You just didn't know that this chametz was still around. So could you really be then penalized for the fact that you inherited the chametz, you didn't know about the chametz, and now that you're not allowed to enjoy the chametz after Pesach? So it's very interesting. The lashon of the Rambam, if you take a look at the Rambam, this is source test over here, source 9 on page 4, and it is actually the Shulchan Aruch quoting the Rambam. This is the Shulchan Aruch Simon Tef Mem Ches Hilkos Pesach Sif Gimel. Chametz shall Yisrael she'avol av Pesach. You have chametz of a Jew, and Pesach passed over. Okay, asa b'hana, you're not allowed to receive any benefit from that chametz. Afidu hinichu shogeg o onus. Even if it was inadvertent that you left that chametz around over Pesach, or even if you were an absolute onus. What is the lashon of onus? Onus means that it was circumstances beyond your control. They're going to penalize you despite the fact that the chametz was in your possession based on circumstances completely beyond your power. Nonetheless, that is the notion of the knas, of the penalty, that we do not allow a person to consume chametz she'avol av Pesach. One second, Yehuda Dov. And therefore, the person presumably is going to be completely out of luck. So you can ask the following question. You can ask, maybe this penalty of the Rambam is only referring to a situation where the person checked for the chametz, but they didn't find the chametz, they didn't know that the chametz was around, but not a situation where the person, number one, checked for the chametz, but they also nullified their chametz, that they did both, that they checked their chametz and they also nullified their chametz. Because this notion that if you nullify your chametz, you're not allowed to partake of the chametz after Pesach, that's the din of Rabbi Yochanan that we mentioned, that's codified separately by the Rambam and by the Shulchan Aruch. That's Sipei in the Shulchan Aruch. It says, chametz shenimsa beveis Yisrael achar Pesach. If you find chametz in the house of Yisrael after Pesach, usher apa pisha bitel. It's going to be prohibited despite the fact that he nullified the Pesach. But, that he nullified the chametz. But we do not find that the two halakos are necessarily combined together. So the halakha Shulchan says, if I combine the situation of anus gamur, a person was completely blindsided by the fact that they had chametz, with a situation where the person did bittul chametz, where they not only tried to check for their chametz and eradicate their chametz, but they also were mevatel their chametz, they also explicitly nullified their chametz. So if I have that combination of factors, so then I could be makel. So that would be very helpful in this case. You can argue that you have that combination of factors. Problem is, the Mishnah Berurah does not accept that chiddush. He does not accept that suggestion that if you combine both of these factors, number one, it was an onus, and number two, the person not only checked for his chametz, but he also was mevatel the chametz, that the chametz could be mutter under those circumstances. So according to the Mishnah Berurah, you're still up the creek. So is there any solution? Yes, you had a question.
Could onus be interpreted as a situation where you didn't give bedikah?
Stomach not. We're talking about where a general situation where the person, they're an onus because they did what they were supposed to do. Doing a bedika is considered to be an absolute obligation. If a person neglected to fulfill their obligation, they could hardly be called an onus. Everybody has an absolute obligation to do bedika of Or HaNer on the 14th night of Nisan. But it's a good question. So the Mishnah Berurah, yes.
That was the Chiddush of the Aruch HaShulchan.
That was the Chiddush of the Aruch HaShulchan.
I mean, the Mishnah Berurah may not have seen that. Chiddush. I mean, the Rosh Hashanah may have seen the Mishnah Berurah. He quotes in several.
They may not have seen each other, but yeah. Mishnah Berurah clearly has a different opinion.
But he did. He may not have seen the Chiddush.
It's perfectly possible, but he wouldn't necessarily have deferred to that Chiddush, even had he seen it. I mean, Mishnah Berurah quotes all kinds of shitos, of his generation and prior to his generation. Doesn't necessarily agree with everybody about everything. But in any event, if you look at source Yud on page 5, the Mishnah Berurah says that there might be some type of a scenario where maybe the onus is so great that we would actually be more lenient, even in a case of an onus gamur with respect to the status of the chametz after Pesach. Take a look at the end of the second line. Kasev Beis Hillel. Nishalti al Yisrael. I was asked about the following case. There was a Jew. He had wheat grains that had not yet been made into chametz, and they were sitting in the mill of a non-Jew, litkon, and they were standing there waiting to be ground. The wheat that just so happens to not get ground up until kolamoid, the Jew would have had no idea that the akum, this non-Jew, is going to start grinding his wheat on Chol HaMoed, because Shira Gil Yom Zayin Shel Pesach, on the seventh day of Pesach, when the Jew certainly cannot have overseen what the Nakvi was doing, because the Jew was in Shol, this is Ayantiv, it's the seventh day of Pesach, Halach, he's listening to Az Yashir, and Halach HaNakvi, B'tachan HaDagan Shel Yisrov, Asim Nakemach Lechem, and the Daga and the Nakvi very happily, it grinds away the wheat kernels of the Yisrael, and he makes flour out of it, and he makes this delicious bread out of the Jew's flour. So the Jew's flour has now been transformed into what hideous object? Chometz. It has now been transformed into chometz based on circumstances that the Jew could not possibly have anticipated or controlled one iota. Behavior pasta Yisrael. Take it back on Pesach. As soon as Pesach is over, he brings this wonderful gift to the Yisrael, says, guess what? I'm bringing you paspalter. Here we have, pasta that I am bread. You don't even have to worry about chodosh anymore, right? Because it's after Pesach, and I'm going to give you the special gift. Beishapti, so what's the psak? Is this a mutter to consume, or is this usher to consume? So he answered, Beishapti shemutter the kachadomim b'ara pasu. He says, I'm not so sure about eating the bread, but the monetary equivalent of the bread, you would be allowed to eat, you would be allowed to enjoy, you'd be allowed to get hanah, in other words, from the bread, and let the nachvi eat the bread. And the Chok Yaakov hiskim the mutter apa achila. And there was another sheet to that of the Chok Yaakov said you could even eat it because maybe the Akum already switched this bread with another bread. And then he quotes the base mayor. And the base mayor says, you know what? Not only could you enjoy the fruit of the monetary worth of this bread, or make the argument that, oh, maybe this bread was just a different bread that was switched with the first bread, but even if this is the actual bread that was baked on Pesach with the grains of the Yisrael, so that it would have been chametz belonging to the Yisrael during Pesach itself, Beis Meir says, it's a mitzadeh lahatzeh b'achila, you're still allowed to eat it. The Afa got the pasuk of mechaber debein b'shogeg debein ma'ones, even though the mechaber ruled that the chametz that you left over Pesach, that was in your possession over Pesach, is going to be prohibited even if you were an honest gomer. La kol onsin shavin. There are own sin, there are own sin. Sometimes it's an accident, and sometimes it's really an accident. Sometimes it's really beyond your control. This is a case which is so egregious, it's so far beyond your control, that you just can't hold the person responsible at all. But onus kazeh, tovah yachol klala suki adaiti, lo lalos al dato. It was a type of situation where he could not have imagined that the Nakri would do something like this. It's like, sometimes in the middle of Pesach, you'll open up your mailbox, and you'll discover that there's like a cookie in your mailbox or something, that they have a special promotion for a certain company. And they'll leave a car. I remember growing up in Muncie. There was one year in Muncie during Chol HaMoed. Everybody received during Chol HaMoed got Girl Scout cookies or something, some special promotion, some Cheerio bar. It was technically a kosher thing, okay? But it was delivered to them on Pesach itself, into their mailbox. So everybody ran to the rabbi. I remember my love growing up was Rabbi Moshe David Temler. He all ran to the rabbi. Tell us, what's going to do? Here we have this chometz that was placed in our mailbox. Was Kone. We had a king in Chatzir that our courtyard, our mailbox, actually acquired for us this chometz on Pesach. What should we do with this? Or what should we do with it? So Rabbi Temler said, well, obviously this is, a blatant act of anti-Semitism. But, you know, leaving that aside, he said this is an explicit halacha. The explicit halacha is that if you have a non-Jew that brings to you chametz on Pesach, so you do not have to accept it. Go back to source test, where we have the three halachas in the Shulchan Aruch. We had Sif Gimel and we had Sif Hei. Now we're going to read Sif Beis. Let's read it. Sif Beis. Im eino Yehudi mevel Yisrael doron chametz b'yom achron shel Pesach. When eino Yehudi brings to a Yisrael a gift of chametz on the last day of Pesach, so lo yikab, this is the chiddush, is even if it's the last day, and you might say, hey, gavoks is mutter, so maybe everything is mutter. You say, no, not akadekak, you can't accept it as a gift, but you don't necessarily have to destroy it either. Lo yikab leno a Yisrael, he just has to refuse the gift. You have the right to say, I'm going to refuse this gift under those circumstances. So you could say you don't want your reshus to be kona on your behalf of this chametz. It's delivered to you on Pesach. You say, my reshus should not be kona on my behalf. I'm not going to be kona this chametz. I'm not going to acquire this chametz. So that's one possible approach. But let's say over here, okay, that you definitely had acquired it because it was your dagon and it was not something where you, at this point in time, you when it was made into bread, so you had no knowledge of it and the nakli was walking around with your bread. Let's assume that it even was in your reshus. But nonetheless, the Mishnah Berurah is saying that this is such a giant onus that we're going to allow you to enjoy the chametz after Pesach. So one could conceivably make the argument as well that if the person who yarshin the chametz before Pesach had no idea that they yarshin the Pesach, the chametz, they just found out after Pesach was over, oh, by the way, this relative, the grandfather, whoever it was, who passed away, the great aunt who didn't have any children and he was the only heir, and he received, you know, everything that he didn't know that the great aunt, you know, had anything. She seemed to live in poverty, but really she had invested, you know, lots of money on Wall Street and she was worth $10 million. You hear such stories. I had a great aunt like that. She was worth like millions of dollars when she died. She didn't have any children. She was a widow. She was worth millions of dollars. I didn't get any of it, but it didn't matter. She was, you know, other relatives got it and they needed it much more and it was perfectly fine. Not complaining. However, sometimes you have that. And this, and so too, your person could discover, just like they had millions of dollars they didn't know about, they have a tremendous collection of schnapps they didn't know about. So if it was a situation where there was no conceivable way in the world that this heir should have anticipated it, either they had no way of anticipating that this relative would die, and then they just found out afterwards, but they didn't know that the person was in dire straits, or they had no reason to think that the person had a schnapps collection or had any chametz, so you might equate that to the case of the Beis Meir of this Onis Gomer type of situation. Onis Gomer type of situation. So maybe there would be room to be makel in that situation, even if it's discovered after chametz, after Pesach, that they had the chametz after all. Like, for example, Rabbi Mordechai Willer gives the following example. He says that this would happen in his home year after year. It was funny that he just said this, b'fnei am ve'eda. He didn't hesitate because he felt that people get very worked up about chametz, that they feel like very, very guilty and they feel terrible if they should discover something during Pesach. Because he raised 9 children or 10 children, and Baruch Hashem, a lot of children are growing. And when you have children, you have lots of Cheerios in the house. So he said that it was inevitable. Every single Pesach, they would do their best. They would check everything, and they would do the most thorough bedikas chametz 30 days beforehand. And they'd go for hours and hours on the 14th night of Pesach. But invariably, either in the middle of Pesach or 3 months after Pesach, they would discover some large stash of Cheerios, okay, in a place that nobody could possibly have imagined, in the middle of the radiator or something like that. I remember one year I opened up the hood of my car and there was a roll sitting there. Fortunately, it was a few days before Pesach. But in places that you would just never dream of looking. So he said that if you've really done a very, so people ask, so what do you do with the Cheerios when you found the Cheerios? Or let's assume he found it, like, say, months after Pesach. Said what we would do, assuming that, you know, the expiration date, you know, hadn't arrived yet. He would eat the Cheerios, right? I mean, I just read a story of somebody who ate a cereal without realizing it 20 years past the expiration date, and like they lived to tell the tale. Not so terrible. They said they would actually, they eat the Cheerios. Whenever you eat the Cheerios, what about the halva? What about Rabbi Yochanan's din? That if even if you do bittul, if the chametz was still in your possession, you didn't sell the chametz, presumably you're not allowed to partake of the chametz. So he said this is an onus gomer. It's an onus gomer. So if that sort of case is an onus gomer, so, you know, we can imagine that this sort of case could be an onus gomer as well. well. All right, but again, that's a situation where the chametz was already in your possession, and it was an onus gomer as far as you were concerned, that you did not know that the chametz was in your possession. So all of this relates to the first scenario that we're discussing. What's that first scenario? The chametz came into your possession prior to the expiration of the time the chametz becomes aser, in which case it would actually clearly come into your possession. It would clearly be yours, right? It would clearly be your chametz. Now, the other question that had come up is, what about selling the chametz? What about if you're going to sell your chametz on the fifth hour of the day? So is this not included in the sale? So it happens that there were many poskim who said that in order to make the sale as legitimate as possible, it's important to identify every single object that is being sold. So if you're identifying every single object, you're not identifying the schnapps because you didn't know about it, so arguably the schnapps is not included in the sale. What if you just say you have this catch-all clause in your sale saying, yes, I'm selling my Oreo cookies, and I'm selling my cold cereal, and I'm selling my ketchup and my vinegar, and I'm also selling any chametz that happens to be in my possession, wherever it may be and whatever it may be. So would that include something like, you know, a Yerusha that you had no anticipation of would happen? Would that be included? So if you take a look at source Yud Zayin, okay, in the very last page, this is Rabbi Akiva Eger. So Rabbi Akiva Eger says, Aldashe Rosso, somebody asked him the question, Shemachar Chedem Yuchad, they sold a particular room, Yimachamit Shebol and Nachri, to the non-Jew, V'amalo Shekor Kemsa Sheyesh Omrokam Acha, Akor Yekonay Lo, that everything will be acquired. That any chametz that he happens to have would be included within the sale of this room, of this real estate. That's called Kinyan Agav. After Pesach was over, he found ground up a barley, like good chewing barley, that was in a different room in his house. The Haholah, can he use this barley in his chewing? Okay, that's what he wants to know. The Haholah Amorah Lashlikam Lamayim. And the Mora said that no problem. The Mora said that you gotta get rid of it. Lokanam Anakwi, the Goy didn't acquire it. Says they did not throw it into the water of the Chilin. Says throw it into, you know, the water of Lake Michigan, because the Goy did not acquire this. It was not spelled out in the sale. It was in a different location, and he didn't know that this barley existed altogether. So says Rabbi Akiva Eger, he disagrees. He thinks that the dove is pashut. The kana chametz the omis stam. If a person says a global clause, as lawyers we know sometimes the global catch-all clauses are actually very good. Like, you know, you write a release in a legal document. So you say, I'm releasing the person from all claims, even claims I may not know about. You want to be as comprehensive as possible. If you say any comments that I have in the entire world, Singapore or Hong Kong or Switzerland or in my basement, wherever it is, Kana, the Goy has acquired, that works, okay? Just like a person could sell all the possessions that he happens to own to somebody. So he says, therefore the Mechira is perfectly fine. So if you follow Rabbi Akiva Eger, so you're able to avoid a lot of these problems. Let's say that the person yashin the chametz at some point 2 days before Pesach, one day on the morning of Pesach, and then the chametz is sold, say on the third hour, the fourth hour, the fifth hour of Pesach, as long as the sale of the chametz takes place after the Yerusha would have effectively taken place, right? After the Yerusha Memela occurred with his knowledge, without his knowledge, so it's included in the sale. Let's say that he sells the chametz like we do here in Kins. We sell the chametz like at 9 in the morning in Erev Pesach, and then the relative who owns all the schnapps dies at 10 in the morning.
Effective 9 or effective the very last minute?
Okay, so one thing that you
when
can do is
it?
You can make it effective the last minute. That's part
that
of our law. So let's say you didn't make it effective the last minute, but let's say you just wrote in the shtar that I'm selling to the goy anything which I own right now, but even anything which may come into my possession until the end of the period of time that I would potentially acquire chametz. So the post can talk about that, and again, the more comprehensive and sweeping the lashon of the document, so the more it will eventually cover in terms of the chametz that is sold. So therefore, if you have these comprehensive clauses in the bill of sale, it would presumably include the schnapps as well, and that should solve all of the problems, which is another good reason. Number one, you should do a mechiras chametz. Number two, you should do a very sweeping and comprehensive mechiras chametz and have this catch-all clause. So when we sell the chametz, we make sure to include this catch-all clause. But again, this only helps you if the Yerusha of the chametz took place before the end of the fifth hour. What happens if the person who owned all the chametz dies after the fifth hour? Okay? So there's a tshuva by the Note of Yehuda in which he discusses this. Specifically, he's discussing a case where the person who owned the chametz died after the sixth hour of the day. Okay? Question.
What if the chametz was sold? Regular case, the chametz was sold, and the person died on Pesach. How does the Yorish get it after Pesach? How does that work in general?
Well, if the chametz is sold, how do you generally get back chametz that you sell under any circumstances? You buy the chametz back from the Nachri after Pesach. Well, all the chametz that we sell, it doesn't even leave our premises for the most part.
No. But the Nachri sells it back to the estate. How does that?
The Nachri would sell it back to this person who's the heir, because from a Torah perspective, it's considered like the heir has the ability to sell the chametz, even if it hasn't yet gone into probate. That was the first point that we mentioned from a viable code. Okay, but a good question. All right, yes.
But how could it go into the interest without violating anything?
We haven't discussed yet him inheriting it after the Yisra starts, right?
We're just
giving the introduction now. This is obviously a good question. So let's review. What happens after the Yisra starts? We have a machlokas, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon in the Gemara, as to when and to what degree chametz is aser b'hana'a, right? To what degree aser is prohibited for a person to benefit from, right? According to Rabbi Shimon, there's only one period of time in which chametz is aser b'hana'a, and that's during the period of Pesach itself. There's lifnei zmano, tok zmano, and le'achar zmano. Lifnei zmano means the period after the sixth hour, after noon, when Pesach becomes aser, until the night of Pesach. So according to Rabbi Shimon, Pesach, the chametz is mutar b'hana'a during that period. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it's already aser b'hana'a. Then there's tok zmano, which everybody agrees that it's us, both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon hold that it's agree that it's aser b'hana'a. And then there's la'acha Pesach, in which Rabbi Yehuda still says, even after Pesach, if I had chametz she'ava l'ava Pesach, it would be aser b'hana'a. Rabbi Shimon says it's not aser b'hana'a. How do we paskin? We paskin, there are three psukim, right? The three psukim say, lo se'achel chametz, lo se'achel lav chametz, and kol machmetzis lo se'achelu. Three times that it says you can't eat chametz. So Rabbi Yehuda says that relates to the three time periods. And ultimately, we paskin, says the Rosh, like Rabbi Yehuda, but only with respect to two of the time periods. We utilize the pasuk of Lo Sechal Rav Chametz and Lo Seachel Chametz, but the pasuk of Kol Machmetzis Lo Sechelu we use to teach me something totally different, and therefore we only have two time periods in which the Chametz is Asa B'hana. What are those two time periods? The period be after the sixth hour of the day, after noon, until the night of Pesach, and the entirety of Pesach. After Pesach, we hold that the Chametz is not Asa B'hana. Why then do we not benefit from the Pesach, from the chametz after Pesach? Because of a knas, because of the penalty that we spoke about, and we spoke about when does the penalty apply, when does the penalty not apply. However, we do assume that we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, that once after the sixth hour sets in, the chametz is going to be aser b'hana'a. Aser b'hana'a means that it's no longer considered to be in the reshus of the individual. Now, if it's not in the reshus of the individual, how is it that we say that the person who still has their chametz is going to violate Bayero Bayimatze, that they violate the prohibition against owning chametz, against seeing chametz, having chametz? Why would the person violate that prohibition? So this is the Gemara in a couple of places quotes Rabbi Elazar and says there were two things that are not really in the reshus of a person, don't really belong to the person, but the Torah asal ki l'vershusa, but the Torah makes it as if it is in your reshus for certain purposes. What are those two things? Anybody know? One is chametz la'achar sheishos. One is the chametz after the point in time in which it becomes aser b'hana'a, in which we say that it's not really considered in your reshus, in the sense that if I would take the chametz after noon and I found a girl that I wanted to marry and I gave her the chametz and I said, you're hereby married to me with this chametz, is she married to me or not? She's completely 100% not married to me. She doesn't have to worry, not even a get l'chumah, not married, because the chametz is not considered to be in my possession. However, do I violate by virtue of having the chametz in my possession? Do I violate by Yerah, by Yemaseh? Yes, by a special scriptural decree. So do we say that because of that special scriptural decree that I am going to violate by Yerah, by Yemaseh, that it's also considered to be in my rishus for other purposes. Let's say a person dies in the middle of Pesach. So do we say it was also in their rishus so that they bequeathed that chametz to somebody else? Or do we say no? They clearly wouldn't bequeath the chametz to somebody else if it wasn't genuinely in their rishus. So this is the question that the Noda Yehuda grapples with. If a person died, okay, with chametz in their possession after the sixth hour of the day, that the chametz clearly is no longer in their possession, but wasn't in their possession to begin with, for purposes of bequeathing the chametz to somebody else. Or do we say that this chametz is now in no man's land? It's in no man's land, okay? What would be the benefit of it being in no man's land? Why is it that we have this knas, this penalty, that, one sec, why is it that we have this penalty that after Pesach, you're not allowed to consume the chametz? Because you violated the prohibition of Bayura or Bayimatsi. At what point in time do you violate Bayura or Bayimatsi? Do you violate it immediately after the sixth hour of the day? Or do you violate it only at nighttime? This is going to have ramifications for our discussion. So the Noda Yehuda starts off by saying, the simple shot is that you only violate Bayura or Bayimatsi on the nighttime of Pesach. So there is this kind of transitional period where the chametz is not considered to be in a person's possession after midday, and yet the person is not yet violated by Bayura or Bayimatsi. So says the Noda Yehuda, this is perfect, because if the person dies after midday, so they have not yet violated Bayura or Bayimatsi, therefore there's no penalty that's going to be assigned to this chametz with respect to not being able to benefit from the chametz after Pesach, and it also doesn't pass into the possession of the heir, because it doesn't really belong to the Moish. It only is considered as belonging to the Moish if he would hold on to it until the nighttime, and he didn't make it that long in terms of violating Bayura or Bayimatsi, but it's not really considered to be in his possession because it's Aser Bahana. So therefore he says, so everybody ends up okay, that there's no violation of Bayura or Bayimatsi on the part of the person who owned the chametz because they died beforehand, and since it wasn't in that person's rishus, therefore it doesn't go into the rishus of the Yorish. Where does it go? Who owns it? The answer is nobody owns it, okay? This is like the case of the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi speaks about a case where, let's say, that I have, take a look in source test above on page 6, okay? Let's say I have a person who converts to Judaism. He is not considered to be related to anybody anymore because Ger Shinis Gayer, Kikakon Shinola Dummy. A person who converts to Judaism is considered like a newborn baby. Doesn't have any relatives. Let's assume he didn't get married yet. We didn't find the Mashiach, okay? He's a Ger without any family. He dies. Who inherits from him? Nobody. He doesn't have any heirs to inherit him. What happens to any chametz that belonged to him? Let's say that he died before Pesach. So what happens to that chametz? Is anybody violated by Rav Ayimatsi during the course of Pesach? No, because nobody received it. It was became completely heter. Okay, so take a look. It says the Mishnah Berurah. If a chametz belonged to a non-Jew during Pesach, so obviously it's mutter after Pesach. But then shall have given. Not only a chametz that belongs to somebody who happens not to be Jewish, but chametz that belongs to nobody also becomes mutter after Pesach. Since there was no prohibition with respect to anybody retaining it over chametz, because it didn't belong to anyone, therefore there's no prohibition eating it after chametz. And similarly, Ger Shemes Kon Pesach, if I have a convert who dies before Pesach, v'niyah chametz, and he left over some chametz, kora kodim mizochim bo'achar Pesach, anybody, he left over a stash of schnapps, the Ger, okay? Somebody runs into his cellar to pick up the schnapps as soon as Pesach is over because they want to make Havdalah on beer, right? So anybody who runs in and they're the first ones to claim it, it's theirs, finders keepers, okay? Mutalo ha-chametz apachila, not only can they get benefit from it, but they're even allowed to consume that chametz. It says the Noda Yehuda, basically, if the person who died after Chatzos, so it should follow that since the there no knash is applicable until nighttime, and the person didn't really own the chametz to pass it on to Yerusha, so therefore everything is fine and good with respect to the chametz. The heir can simply be zoche min ha-hefker. The heir would be allowed to simply pick up this chametz from hefker after Pesach is over, and therefore they would not have any kind of restriction whatsoever. That is his first answer when he is analyzing the case. But then he goes on to say that in reality, it really depends on how you interpret a Rambam. Take a look at the Rambam in source Zion on page 2. Okay, Rambam says... Okay. Two Rambams. The Rambam on source Hay and the Rambam on source Zion. Rambam on source Zion is interesting because it deals with a kind of the Yotzei Dofen situation, which I'll just gloss over because it's a very unusual situation. This is the person who dies not after the sixth hour, but during the sixth hour. I went up until the fifth hour. I didn't discuss what happens during the sixth hour. It happens that during the sixth hour, the chametz is also asa bahana. You can't get benefit during the sixth hour, but that's only midrabanan. That's a rabbinical gezerah, rabbinical ordinance, which was made because people will get, you know, confused between the sixth hour and the seventh hour. But let's say you took some chametz and you used it to be mekadesh and isha during the sixth hour. So according to the Rambam, afidu haya asa hana bin divrei hamdin chametz b'shah shishis miyom habasar einem mekudeshes. That's already considered to be out of a person's possession. So according to the Rambam, for sure, if a person passed away during the sixth hour of Erev Pesach, then for sure the chametz is has not yet violated Vayuro Vayimatzeh, because we haven't even hit the sixth hour yet, right? Never mind the evening. And the Rambam would say at that point in time, it's not considered to be in their possession. Now it happens that the Ramban rules that if you use chometz to be mekadesh and isha during the sixth hour, since it's only asa b'hanam midrabanan rabbinically, you would be choshesh in the kiddushin. That you wouldn't say, like, she's not definitely mekudeshes, but she's not definitely not mekudeshes either. So according to the Ramban, you might have a bigger problem. Maybe it really still is considered to be in the possession of the person who owned it and who died during that time, so that it really would pass on to the heir, so that at that point in time, the heir really would have certain responsibilities, and since it's the sixth hour, he can no longer be mevatelin, and he can no longer sell it, so then he's really going to end up being stuck on some level with respect to that chometz. That's going to be a tough situation. However, the more common situation that the Noda Yudah was dealing with is the person died after the sixth hour. So the Rambam has a very interesting lasha. This is in Hay, and he says that lefikachim lo bito karmi sheish misheishos l'mal matzah chometz. The person did not nullify the chometz before the sixth hour. Then afterwards they found chometz sheyadaito lava yevulibo v'shakol v'shas habiyo. They forgot about it, lobiro. They didn't get rid of it, and they weren't mebatel it. So then they're over on Bayiro Vayimatse. When does it sound like he's over on Bayiro Vayimatse? So ain't a bitl, he can't do bitl anymore. Ain't a bishus, it's because it's no longer in his possession. It's only considered in his bishus for purposes of his violating Bayiro Vayimatse. So when, according to the Rambam, has the person violated Bayiro Vayimatse? Does it sound like the Rambam is saying the person only violates it at night, or does it sound like the person violates it already in the middle of the day? What do you think, Yehuda?
From the sixth hour.
Sounds like from the sixth hour. So the Ravid comes along, and the Ravid says, yeah, I disagree with the Rambam. He says, to take a look at the second to last line, Ulai Sobe Zer Machaber. Maybe the Rambam is of the opinion, Sho'ovim Mishay Shalos Lamala, that he violates by Yerav Vayimatsi already from the sixth hour, below Yerav Vayimatsi, Ve'eno Kendev Shivas Yamim Ksiv. But it says, Shivas Yamim, Lo Yimatsi So'ov Bevateichem. It says, the 7 days, Lo Yimatsi, 7 days, Lo Yimatsi So'ov Bechol Gubulecha. 7 days. It doesn't say 7.5 days. It says 7 days, right? So therefore, it says the Ravid, there's no violation until nighttime. Comes along the Magen Mishnah, and the Magen Mishnah says the Ravid completely misunderstood the Rambam, and then of course, the Rambam says when he's describing the various halachos, he says, the Rambam, when he's describing the violation of Bayiro Vayimatse, says, kol shiva, kol shiva. It sounds like it's only 7 days, which would begin at the nighttime, and not in the middle of the day. So this is a big question mark. So the Noda Yudah says, if you understand that the pshat in the Rambam, if you understand like the Rambam, the Bayiro Vayimatse doesn't occur until nighttime, so then all is fine and good, according to his analysis. But if you understand, Pashup Shah in the Rambam, Yehuda Dov said, he thought that it was Pashup Shah in the Rambam. He just learned the sugi in Yeshiva, that Pashup Shah in the Rambam is Bayiro Vayimatse kicks in already after the sixth hour. So then, even if a person who's inheriting the chometz doesn't really inherit, he hasn't violated Bayiro Vayimatse himself, still, the person who owned the chometz had already violated Bayiro Vayimatse, and therefore the penalty that is applicable to chometz of a Lava Pesach should be applicable to this chometz. After all, if a somebody, some other Jew, through no fault of your own, leaves chametz over Pesach and doesn't eradicate it, doesn't get rid of it, so that person's not allowed to ever enjoy that chametz ever again, forever. That chametz is going to be usher forever. It never becomes mutter. Like you go to a supermarket owned by a Jew. So we say, oh, so after Pesach is over, you should wait a little while before you buy in that supermarket because all the chametz is going to be chametz shavah of a Pesach, if there is such a supermarket, right? And then the question is, how long do you wait? Do you wait till Lag BaOmer? You wait till Shavuos, right? Different minhagim, maybe based on, you know, the where the supermarket gets its merchandise from and how long the shelf life is and so forth. I discovered that one of the common stores that you see in the airports in the area is actually owned by a Jewish family. I'm not under the impression they necessarily sell the chametz. Because a lot of us, we do a lot of traveling. I go to airports a lot. And, you know, you stop in and you want to buy a granola bar or something like that. It's very exciting, right? After Pesach, you could buy it, even if you worry about Yashin and during the rest of the year. After Pesach, everything is good, right? So you can go and buy the granola bars, but you have to worry about Chametz Shavah Lava Pesach because the store might be owned by a Jew. So you got to check and see, is the store owned by a Jewish family? And then maybe you got to wait a little bit, a few weeks before you can buy the granola bars. But the granola bars, if they really are Chametz Shavah Lava Pesach, that granola bar is going to be us 20 years from now, if you still wanted to eat it then. It's going to be us forever. When we buy in a place like that after Lag BaOmer, after Shavuos, that's because we assume that it's different merchandise, that it wasn't the merchandise that was Chametz Shavah Lava Pesach. But if it was owned by a Jew during Pesach, so it's us forever. It's us for everybody forever. So therefore, there's not going to be any wiggle room. So this is going to be very important to determine whether you've crossed that Bayer Avayim Matzi threshold or whether you haven't crossed it. So if you hold that Bayer Avayim Matzi kicks in right after the 6th hour, so then you're going to be in trouble, presumably, according to that opinion, if the Pashup shot within the Rambam, and it would seem then that it would not be permitted for the person to be, for the heir, to enjoy the chametz after Pesach, even if he doesn't himself yarshin that chametz. But even this premise, the premise of the note of the note of Yehuda, that the heir would not yarshin, would not inherit the chametz after the 6th hour, because it's already asa b'hanah, so this is challenged by two different authorities. One authority is the Avnei Miluim, okay, that source Yud Aleph. The Avnei Miluim actually is the Ha'oros, the Avnei Miluim, brings a raya from the Gemara in Kiddushin and Daf Yud Zayin and Beis. The Gemara in Kiddushin there talks about somebody who converts to Judaism, and then their non-Jewish father dies, and leaves a Yerusha. Half of the Yerusha is Avodah Zarah, and half of the Yerusha are things which are perfectly permissible. Okay? Money. Okay? He leaves $200,000. The first $100,000 is in the form of Avodah Zarah, of idols, and the other $100,000 is in the form of money. What does the Jewish heir want to receive? The goy, the ger, the convert. He doesn't want the Avodah Zarah. It's Aser Bahana. So he says, you take the, you know, I'll take the money, you take the cannolis, whatever. You take the Avodah Zarah, and I will take the money. Okay? I will take the money. So, says the Gemara, how can he do that? He's getting kind of like a schar. He's getting a payment of the value of the Avodah Zarah to his money. So he's therefore getting enough from the Avodah Zarah. So the Gemara says, no, the Yerusha that a ger receives from his father, that a convert receives from his non-Jewish father, is only Midrabanan. It's not Midoraisa. Had it been Midoraisa, though, it would be considered as if he had also inherited the Avodah Zarah, and therefore he can't exchange anything for that Avodah Zarah, because that would be considered to be payment for the Avodah Zarah. So we see, even though Avodah Zarah is clearly Asabar now, we don't even say that for any purpose it's considered as if it is in the person's possession, but for Yerusha purposes, as we started off today, we said, Yerusha is a milsim de memela. It's something that happens incidentally, it happens automatically. So for Yerusha purposes, even if something is Asa Bahana, it goes into the person's possession. So therefore, this they say that this Gemara is a proof against the Noda Behuda's assumption that since the Pesach, since the Chametz, on Pesach is considered to be Asa Bahana, therefore it would not pass through in Yerusha. It's not true. It would pass through in Yerusha anyway, and therefore it's considered as if, even though the Jewish person or the heir who is receiving the Yerusha of the live Jewish person who's receiving the Yerusha from the Moish didn't do anything wrong, still it's going to be in his possession during Pesach, and therefore had, there will be willy-nilly some type of a bayiro, bayimotze infraction, and therefore it should be usher after Pesach, okay? If we would assume like this line of reasoning. One second. The Makor Chaim, the Nesivos, also brings another argument against the Noda B'Yehuda. Take a look at the first line in source Yud Beis, actually second line. Ulevavi Loken Yidme says the Noda B'Yehuda assumes that it's not money that could have passed over to, could have passed on to the heirs. He says, I don't agree. My heart does not assent to this conclusion. The nearer the kosher enum mean mitam the chametz isuri hana, that he says that the kosher enum mamon mitam the chametz isuri hana, even though it's not considered to be money because of the fact that it's asav banah, he's not allowed to get to derive enjoyment from it. Nonetheless, rachmana akshavei neged bayirok idu mamon gomer asav b'shuso. The Torah says that it's considered like it's in his possession for purposes of Bayura, so the Torah places it in his Rishus. It's only in the case of Adaptam Nachri Shevi Doan Eno Chayef Levaro. Only if a Nachri brings a gift, you don't have to get rid of it because you could say that you don't intend to acquire the Girl Scout cookies on Pesach itself. But a Yerusha, the Filo Yachamis, you don't acquire anything from somebody else unless you want to. They mock me on the Makoko, you don't transfer something into a person's possession against the will. About a Yerusha, the Iluai Loya comments, but when it comes to an inheritance, even if it's not comments, a person cannot turn down an inheritance. It happens willy-nilly whether they like it or not. Yorish Ame Eni Rosh Eli Rosh Eino Klum. It doesn't count as anything if a person says, I don't want to be Yorish. So therefore, the Chametz Akshavei Rachman of the Mamon Gomor. So therefore, they take issue with this assumption of no debut, and they say that this really would be a problem in all of these cases, that the Chametz would be considered like it passes on to the heirs. Now, what did we say? We said that there were two different cases where, according to the Torah, something is not in your rishus, but the Torah makes it as if it's your rishus. So I had mentioned the case of chametz after the sixth hour. You had mentioned another case. What was the case you mentioned? A bor b'rishus harabim. So what would be our perfect sample, you know, model case in order to test out the no debut this theory? Somebody digs a bor. Somebody, this is our perfect test case. Somebody digs a bor in the Rishus HaRabim and then they die, okay? So what happens? Somebody now falls and slips into the bor and they hurt themselves, okay? So in such a case, do we hold the heirs responsible? Do we hold responsible the son of the person who dug the bor, right? So this would be a very good model case to look at in terms of the Noda B'Yehuda's theory. And lo and behold, this actually is discussed. Look at Source Tes Zayin. Source Tes Zayin is the Mikroi Kodesh, which Tzvi Pesach Frank brings from Yeshua Leib Diskin. He brings from Yeshua Leib Diskin precisely this case. A person digs a bor in the Rishus HaRabim, and then somebody falls into it, and they... The person falls in and gets it. The person who dug the bor dies, and then somebody else falls in and gets injured and wants to be able to collect damages. Are the Yorshim obligated to pay up? Are they not obligated to pay up? So Rishu Leib Diskin is noted, he is inclined to say that the heirs are in fact responsible. So says Rishu Pesach Frank, I think that this is questionable, because he says even though the bor makes it as if it is in the rishus of the one who dug it, that's a penalty that we impose for damages, for liability purposes, on the person who dug the bor. But it's not his actual possession, so therefore it's not property to transfer to the yorshim. There's no real yerusha that would be applicable over here because of the fact that it doesn't really belong to the chofer. I mean, this isn't even a more extreme case. You can argue that chametz on some level belong to the person beforehand, and therefore they still retain some possession. A pit that you dig in the middle of public thoroughfare, it's hard to say you ever really had any possessory rights. If anything, you just had certain liability obligations, so maybe this is even more removed. But he says, no, the Noda B'Yehuda says over there there's no Yerusha, and that there's only the Chiddush that the person has liability. But that's not something which is a property that gets passed on to the heirs. And he quotes, he says, and I discovered the Noda B'Yehuda said the same thing with respect to chametz akashesh after 6 hours of the day. That the yorshim do not have an obligation to get rid of the chametz, and therefore he permits the chametz for consumption after Pesach, because it was never something that came into their possession. So, yes.
Did you say that the convert has a newborn baby?
Yes.
How can they hear it from a father who doesn't recognize
it? It's only midrabbanan. It's only midrabbanan. So a person shouldn't feel bad that they converted. Oh, now I convert. I can't get to in heaven anymore. So they say, no, it's okay. We'll let you inherit. But that's only on a midrabbanan level. Okay? At least with respect to that inheritance. Now, one thing that even the Noda of Yehuda would agree to is that once you get after Pesach, okay, it's coming. Let's say the person dies 2 minutes after Pesach is over. The person dies 2 minutes after Pesach is over, so then for sure the knas went into effect, okay? Because the knas, the penalty of a person who had kept chometz for the entire duration of Pesach, and now they're penalized after Pesach, so that penalty goes into effect immediately after Pesach is over if they're still alive. So according to the Noda Yehuda, if the person dies during Pesach, so then the chometz is not inherited, and the Noda Yehuda says the penalty is also not inherited as well because it never really went into effect. Since it never really went into effect, so therefore it's not going to be passed on to the heirs. However, even he concedes that if the person only died 2 minutes after Pesach ended, so then for sure there's not going to be any room for leniency. So that's something that would have to be assessed. You want to make sure that the person died at least before Pesach came to a conclusion. But again, not everybody agrees with the Noda of Yehuda altogether that the Pesach, that the chometz on Pesach would not pass Biyarusha. So these are just a kind of an interesting overview. But what also is interesting is that here we're talking about this Pesach, but that's assuming that the Morish sold the chometz every in the schnapps every single prior Pesach. If you find out that this is a person who never sold their chometz anyway, so it wouldn't matter when they died vis-a-vis this Pesach season if they didn't sell the Pesach the schnapps last Pesach season. So then you're not going to be able to benefit from the schnapps anyway. So that's something that would also have to be looked into. I don't want to go over time. We also have lots of preparation to do for Pesach. I want to wish everybody a Chag Kosher v'Sameach. Everybody should have a very enjoyable Pesach. Not have to deal with these shilas. Everybody should live and be well. May I rest in shalom.
The cereal, the point in the sieve is the cereal gets delivered to us during Pesach of the mail, and we can eat that cereal after because it's not automatic Yerusha like Yerusha.
You have in mind not to be Konech.
So then we can eat that cereal after Pesach.
Yeah, but leave it in the mailbox. If you leave it in the mailbox. If you take it out of the mailbox,
well, we're not taking it out of the mailbox.
We leave it in the mailbox, yeah.
Also, does anybody argue with the Rashba as far as Dina the Machmusa Dina? Doesn't Rav Moshe about the wills that he... I mean, does anybody argue with the Rashba? The five-o cone. He says, no, everybody that... Yerusha is not in the Machmusa Dina. Is there machlokes on that? Is that the universal?
No, everybody, that's universal. Everybody agrees that there's no Dina Machmusa Dina. Rav Moshe holds that the Kinyan...
By wills.
Rav Moshe holds that the Kinyan that takes trade with respect to wills might be subject to Dina Machmusa Dina. But there's a whole machlokes had to interpret that Rav Moshe. Remind me to do a session on your one or two sessions on Yerusha. Yeah, we haven't done Yerusha yet, right?
No.
Okay, let's do Yerusha. Okay, let's put that on the agenda for after Pesach. We have to do that. Okay,